Good morning. So last time we talked about storing information in ways that maybe are more convenient than just defining new registers in HTLRS. We started by saying, okay, we have this built-in register file. We kind of saw it because HTLRS was outputting the values of our general purpose registers that we never had set. And we learn that this register file was, well, something we could have built from the normal registers we had. And it took in some inputs, it had some outputs. It had inputs for reading, where you specify the index of a register, which was going to be the same index that would appear in the machine code. And you got the value of the register and the corresponding output. It had inputs for writing, where you specified the index of a register you wanted to modify and the value you wanted to put there. And at the rising edge of the clock, which was our common theme, everything that modifies a stored value is using this rising edge of a clock. At that rising edge of the clock, the register file would modify that stored value. And we said, oh, wait, if we have these inputs which write a value, how does that work when I don't want to modify a value? There's a lot of instructions that don't change two registers. In fact, most of them. And we have two inputs to modify different registers. Two inputs specify different registers to modify, and corresponding inputs specify their value in the register file. So what do we do about that? Well, you have this special value we can use, which was 15, called register not in HTLRS, that says don't do anything instead of writing a register. That's the choice our textbook authors made in having a way of not writing a register. We could have done something else, like had an extra input saying enable write or disable write, but they decided to have this extra register index. We also talked about the data memory. So it looked like, oh, we have a way to read memory, so we could implement instructions like memory to register move. But when we tried to do that, we found out that if we wanted to implement memory to register move, we would have to take two cycles to do that with our existing setup. Because we'd have to first read the arrow move queue in one cycle, and then we'd have to access the place in memory in a separate cycle. We couldn't do it in the same cycle because then we'd have one of those loops where we'd have this changing output going back into our instruction memory, and our instruction memory would be unstable. It wouldn't generate a stable output as we were doing that. Instead, we needed something like registers to control when our outputs change, and therefore when the inputs to our components change, so they eventually produce a stable result, so we don't have to worry about the values always changing. And our solution for this was that, well, we weren't actually going to make error move queue take two cycles. Instead, our processor design we've been working on, we've decided that we're going to make every instruction work in one cycle. So to do that, we added a second memory we called the data memory. And the data memory for reading works basically the same way as the instruction memory. We put in an address, we get out the value at that address. It also supports writing because, well, we have some instructions that need to do that. And for writing, it works kind of the same way the register file did writes. We specify where we want to write, address input, we specify what we want to write, and at the rising edge of the clock, those will be applied and memory will be modified. Then we have to switch between these two different modes, and the way our textbook authors chose to do that for data memory is that they have signals saying enable reading, enable writing, that we set probably using some sort of mux to decide what to do for which instruction. So after going through all our components and looking at, well, how we can use them to, say, implement moves, we talked about sort of generally our processor having sort of different parts that our textbook calls stages. This is a way of dividing up the work of our processor and can be helpful for thinking of, well, how am I going to implement the processor? So one way we could do that is we could say, okay, I need to implement, say, POP queue. So let's think of all the things POP queue does, try to do that. And we could absolutely do that, but that might seem a little unwieldy. There's a lot of things going on in an instruction like POP queue. And instead we want to think of it in smaller pieces, and the stages are a way that's going to help us do that. Because, for example, if we're only thinking of, say, the decode stage, the decode stage is just asking, what registers are we reading? For POP2, we can actually answer that. We can say, oh, we need to read the stack pointer, probably going to need that. And if we're popping into a register, oh, we don't need to read that register, we just need to write it. And then we can answer that question about how to implement POP, that part of POP2's logic. We can keep doing that for each stage. And we're going to look more at stages next time. But an important thing we went over last time is that the stages, at this point, don't actually tell us when things happen. The way we find out when things happen is we look at how our components work and we look at dependencies. So we learn that all the things that do writes, the writes actually happen at that rising edge of the clock. That's when they're going to happen, because there's this one clock signal that doesn't. Now, of course, the values we're writing, we'll have computed them before the rising edge of the clock, possibly way before. And as for other values being computed, well, most of our components work by when we give them the right inputs, with some delay, they're going to compute the right outputs, like our PC increment circuit, once it knows the opcode and the old PC value, after some amount of time after that, it's going to compute the correct new PC. And our main topic for today is going to be going through these stages a little more systematically and thinking about what our special cases are, so we can do our full processor design that you're going to be doing in the homeworks in the upcoming weeks. Before I move on to that, questions about things we covered last time? So we had, let me go through our stages. So we had fetch, decode, which is really registers, execute, memory, write back, and PC update. So we're just going to go through them in order. And I'm going to show you what the textbook says happens there using the textbook's names, which may or may not be the most sensible names. And we're going to think about what that looks like as far as an overall circuit diagram. So our first stage is fetch. So the fetch stage, the main thing it does is it reads the instruction memory at the program counter. It gets our current instruction. We learn when we learn how the instruction memory works that this is going to read 10 bytes. Most instructions aren't 10 bytes. That's fine. We're just not going to use all of the 10 bytes all the time. And the two main pieces of logic we're going to do in the instruction fetch stage is we're going to get the fields from the instruction for later stages. So this includes extracting the opcode, which our book calls iCode, and the secondary opcode, if there is one, which our book calls iFun, extracting the register numbers, if there are any, and extracting a constant from the instruction, which our book calls valc. Our book has this convention that they call the various 64-bit signals around the processor a vowel and a letter. Probably, if we were thinking carefully about naming them, we would think of names like, you know, immediate or constant. Like, I can think of a lot of variable names that seem better to me. But that's not what our textbook did, and now I'm going to try to use the terms from our textbook. And also, the other big task of the instruction fetch is to compute the next instruction address. And I'm being very careful here. This is just the, you know, assuming PC increments. So jumps, etc., are handled elsewhere. So this is just, you know, if we're going on to the instruction that's after this in assembly, we compute where the next instruction is, and our textbook has something called valp, which is the address of the following instruction, which again, probably we could think of a better variable name for this. questions on our fields. Okay, so if I'm drawing out what our fetch stage does, we get our program counter value, put it through the instruction memory, we split it out into the constant from the instruction, RA, RB, and we also compute the instruction length using the iCode like you did in lab yesterday, and add that to get our new, you know, next instruction address, which usually will be our next program counter address. I guess something worth noting here about our val C, this immediate, is that this is in different places in the instruction depending on which instruction it is. So this is not just a fixed part of the instruction. There's a little bit of figuring out exactly where it is in the instruction. Okay, so then we have our next stage, which is decode. And as I mentioned earlier, decode maybe is poorly named. If I were naming it, I'd probably name it register read. In the case of our textbook author's processor design, we aren't actually doing any of the logic that like examines the parts of the instruction to figure out what it does. Like that logic isn't really here. So mainly what we're doing is reading registers, in particular getting the two values of the registers, which our textbook calls val A for the value we get from source A, and val B for the value we get from source B. And the most straightforward way to set this up is that we just take the RA and RB we extracted earlier and send them to our register file. That's our most straightforward option. Okay. That seems like the common case, but this won't always work. So let's say I started with this processor. Where have I done something which is going to get me in trouble later? You know, that by connecting RA and RB to source A and source B, where have I gotten in trouble for which of these instructions? So there's some of these instructions where it's going to be a little problematic how I set things up so far. So let's think about that. If you have a question about this question, we'll do that. Otherwise, give everyone a minute to think over and check with your neighbors, see if you agree on which ones should be problems. So would this be bad? Would this like not be the right what thing we want to do for knob, for add, M remove Q, R remove Q, jump, push? Which of those? Or are they all fine? Question?
There's no memory, so how would it do the MR move
R? Question, there's no memory, so how would it do the MR move Q? So our data memory is here. I just haven't hooked it up yet. But that's not a problem yet because I can still hook it up. I can still add that on without disrupting anything I've already done. So yes, we do have a memory that we need to hook up yet. We also have to like hook up the PC input still, but we still have choices in how we do that. Who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we have a problem for not? for doing something we shouldn't do, for not, okay, thoughtful people, for add, okay, no one, for M or move Q, thoughtful people, okay, for R move Q, few people, for jump, a bunch of people, okay, and for push, a few people. So let's go through these. So start with nap. So for nap, the complaint you probably have is I read the description of what nap does, and it doesn't say anything about reading registers. Why are we reading registers? I think that's a legitimate complaint, but if we do read these registers, this is fine as long as we don't actually do anything with the wires that are going to come out. So we don't do anything with that. We're just getting some values and ignoring them. Getting the values is not going to cause any errors. It's not like accessing memory at an invalid location. So there shouldn't be any problem. So this should be, you know, so this is a might be better not to. Better to use reg done, but shouldn't be a problem. And I'm guessing that probably changes some people's answers in the later ones. So we'll go through again. So for add, pretty much everyone agreed that this is great. For add, we want to read our A and our B. We better read our A and our B, or else it's going to be hard to add the values of those registers. So that seems good. For MR move Q, so who thinks we'd have a problem with MR move Q after our clarification for not? So for MR move Q, you might say, indeed, we did, maybe it would be better if we didn't read our A. So, you know, I'll put a, you know, sort of wiggle, but it should be fine. Or, I'm saying which are a problem. So, no problem. This is okay for add. This is okay-ish for MR move Q. Because we get reading extra registers isn't going to be a problem if we don't use their values. And for R move Q, we better read RA and RB. We need to read RA because we're going to send it to the memory. We better read RB because we're going to add it to the displacement, for which is val C here. So this is perfectly fine. So for jump, I think it's the same situation as not. We don't modify any registers. So this is, it's okay to read some extra registers that we aren't going to use, even though maybe it would be better not to. How about for push? So what does push do? Someone tell me to describe what push does. If I have, give it a more specific example. So if I have push Q, RAX, what should it do? Yeah. Puts RAX on the stack. So we're taking RAX and we're putting it on the stack. So how do we know where the stack is? Yeah. So something with the stack pointer, which is RSP, and it's based on memory at actually the stack pointer being decremented. And there's one thing that we missed in our initial description of what putting on the stack also does, is it also changes where the stack hub stack pointer is. So also we're gonna set RSP to, we're gonna decrement RSP, set RSP on seconds. So that's what push does. So if we look at that description, we better get the value of the stack pointer, or else it's going to be very hard to implement. And we also need the value of RAX, but it looks like we're probably already reading it. RAX is one of these, but we better also read the stack pointer. So push is not okay. Push, we would definitely have a problem here because we need to read the stack pointer. And so that's where I say that, you know, push, pop, call, return, all need to use the stack. We better read the stack pointer. And the stack pointer is not something that appears in the instruction. And this means that we're going to have to compute the input register to be the stack pointer in cases where it's not RA or RB. And in our books, they say, oh, we're going to set source A and source B, you know, based on the instruction. For this reason, we aren't going to have them just always be RA and RB from the instruction. And a way we might figure this out is we might say, okay, so I need source A and source B. Let's figure out what they should be and just go through all the instructions and make a table. This is one way you might build your processors. You just say, okay, for this instruction, what registers do I want to read? Well, I don't need to read any, so we'll just write none here. For CMove and RMoveQ, I need to read RA. And for RMoveQ, I need to read RB. For RMoveQ and up, I need to read RA and RB. And just go through all the instructions systematically. And as you do that, you find out, oh, I looked at the description of what call and return should do, and I better read the stack pointer. And I chose here to use it, read it with source B, because for push and pop, that's going to be a lot more convenient, because it allows me to cab RA and source A and make the logic for source A simpler. But I could also read it from source B. And as I mentioned, like in this diagram, I'm explicitly passing the register none value, which will read a zero, if you remember correctly, from how our register file worked. But I could just as easily pass some arbitrary register number and just ignore the output. So I could just, you know, I could just say, okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to choose RA or RB in those cases, and just know I'm not going to use the result. So questions about our choosing registers to read logic? Okay, so then we have this corrected version where I fixed up our little problem by adding a mux where I can choose the register number for RSP for source key. And everything seems fine. Now our next stage is going to be execute. This is where we perform an ALU operation, and our textbook calls the output of the ALU val E. Again, another place where maybe we could think of a better variable name. And the ALU operations add, subtract, XOR, and AND, which happens to match up exactly with the operations we support for OpQ, which makes sense. We're just exposing all the things the ALU can do as our instructions. Also, this is the part of the processor where we deal with condition codes. And it makes sense that we do it here because the condition codes are based on the last arithmetic operation. So if arithmetic happens, this is where it happens. And we'll use that to update the condition codes. Also, where we have the logic for using the condition codes, partly because, well, it's where the condition codes are set, and partly because when we get to our sort of design where the stages are actually the order things happens, it will be very convenient that we do this in the same stage where the condition codes are set. For timing reasons, we'll talk about in a couple classes. And our textbook has a signal they call CND, which is whether the condition codes, the condition codes would be met for the current instruction, as in, like, if it's a jump less than, do the condition codes mean less than? So the ALU operation is fairly straightforward, except we'll need to figure out what the inputs are. And the condition codes, maybe it's a little not clear how we would do our logic that uses the condition codes. And maybe the simplest way of thinking about it is we'll have a mux where we take our instruction condition code indicator. So this tells us whether, like, we have a jump less than, jump greater than, normal jump, and so on. And we'll use that nibble from the instruction to decide whether we're, you know, doing it always, doing it if SF or ZF is true, in which case we'll have an input which is SF or ZF. So is the sine flex set or is the zero flex set, which is less than or equal. And we'll do that for all the possibilities. And we can use that to decide later on, not in this stage, but we can use it to decide later on whether or not we're, say, writing to RB or writing to nothing, say for C. Or similarly, for conditional jump, we can use it to decide whether we're going to the next instruction or to the constant that we got from the instruction as our next piece. These are both things that we will use in later stages. I'm just showing an example for CMove, conditional move, where we use it to decide what register to write. But we'll use sort of this value here sometime later. But the execute stage is where we're going to figure out what it is, whether it's met or not. And because this value is part of the control logic, I'm honestly not going to draw it. So you won't see it on the diagram on the next page. But for the ALU operation, here's our straightforward connection. If we think of opq, that's our sort of canonical ALU-using instruction, we're going to take RA and RB's values, combine them in the ALU, and we're also going to set the ALU's function select signal to select whether we do an add, subtract, XOR, and so on. And like before, there might be some instructions where this is not something that's useful to do, that where we've messed something up that we would need to fix. So let's get this list of instructions. Same question. Where have we made a mistake where we can't wire around this problem because we're using the ALU correctly for one of these instructions, or one or more of these instructions? If you'd like some more time. Okay, so let's start with Nop. Who thinks we'd have a problem with Nop? Okay. How about add? Okay. How about M over Q? Okay. Cool. Pop. Cool. And call. You more people. Okay, so let's start. So for Nop, the complaint might be Nop doesn't add, subtract anything, and that's true, but I guess there's two issues here. So one is that if we do add or subtract, it's not a problem as long as we don't use the result. The second is that the way this ALU works, it's always going to be doing something. Like, we can't stop that. So, you know, we just have to deal with not using the results. You know, it's always, as in, it's always doing something, as in, you know, we can't have no input here. These set of wires here, it's gonna have a value on it, as is this one, so the ALU is gonna compute something. We just don't always care about it. For add, it's pretty straightforward. We just tell the ALU to an add, or we have the right register values. For M remove Q, this is when we said, oh, there might be a problem here. And in our processor design, generally, we're gonna want any big arithmetic operation that's done as part of executing an instruction to be done by the ALU. We're not going to build a second circuit to do those arithmetic operations. We don't want to have more circuits that do addition, subtraction, and so on than we need. So for M over Q, there is an addition we need to do, which is going to be the... So I'll write, this we'd have a problem. This is going to be for D, RB, we need to do an addition to compute the address, and the place we want to do it is the ALU, because we don't want to make a separate adder to do that. We already have an adder that we don't have any other use for in this instruction. Let's please use it. So we're going to want that, but the problem is that this is D. Val C here is the D from that instruction, and it has no way of getting to the ALU right now because we sent something else to the ALU's inputs. So for pop, so what does pop do? So this is something thinking out, since pop is a complicated instruction. And I guess if we say we have pop RAX, you would say that this into RAX gets a value from the stack. But what that actually means is that it gets it from memory at the stack pointer, but it also changes where the stack pointer is. It removes it from the stack. It just doesn't just peek at it on the top of the stack. It modifies how big the stack is. And to do that, we're going to set RSP to RSP plus 8. And this second part here, well, we have to compute RSP plus 8. Where are we going to do that? Again, we don't want to add a second adder when we already have one that is not being used otherwise by the instruction, so we're going to do it in the ALU. But the problem is the ALU, well, we can get the stack pointer, which we know will be here on this source B output wire, but we don't have any place to put in the 8. So we need to do something about implementing RSP plus 8. And a bunch of people said we had a problem with a call. So what does the call do? Can someone tell me what call does? What, mechanically, what does the instruction do? Yes, back there. Okay, so call is gonna go to a location and puts the old location on the stack. And like with pop, it doesn't just put it on the stack, it adds it to the stack, which means it's going to modify the stack pointer to do that. So it also is going to set the stack pointer to, it's going to have to decrement the stack pointer to add room for the new thing, just like we learned push does. So this is going to need to compute RSP minus 8, which again, we have RSP here, but we don't have any way of doing the minus 8 calculation right now, and we want to use the ALU for that because we don't want to have a separate adder or subtractor circuit when we already got one. We want to use the one we already have. So we also have a problem for that. So we have a problem for these last three instructions where we want to do something different. So questions and how we figure that out? Yes?
When we execute the stack, do we do RSP plus 8 or RSP minus 8?
When we're adding something to the stack, do we do RSP plus 8 or RSP minus 8? We do RSP minus 8 when we add things to the stack because the stack grows towards lower addresses.
Okay,
other questions? Okay, so we saw we had our two exceptions that we needed inputs from the instruction sometimes. So for MRMoveQ and RMoveQ, we needed the displacement. And also for the stack instructions, we went to add or subtract 8. We don't have 8 anywhere, so we need some way of getting that. And this is going to give us sort of a possible solution is like this, that rather than just having the value of register A, or that we'd also be able to input our val C, that constant from the instruction, or 8 for our stack manipulating instructions to add or subtract 8. So questions? Or execute stage. Okay, so our next stage is memory, and there's one signal our textbook talks about being generated here, which they call valm. Again, maybe you could think of a better name, which is just the output of the data memory, which, you know, if we aren't reading from memory, it won't really matter. And if we're thinking about accessing memory, you know, I think about, okay, so let's think about our simple memory accessing instruction, which is MRMoveQ. RMoveQ, or simple writing memory instruction, because writing is probably the most straightforward part, because for reading, we have to get the value stored back, which we haven't read that yet, so we're not there yet. But for writing, we want to take the value from RA, we want to send it to the memory, and we want to write to the memory at an address we compute by adding a displacement and a register, which comes from our ALU. So this is our set up for accessing memory. And doing nice, the straightforward thing, same question. So where have we screwed up? Or does this just work for all these instructions? Because it turns out that we want to always have, if we're writing a value to memory, it's always from RA. And if we're in the place we're writing it, it's always something we're computing. So are we just set? Think about that, check. Neighbors. And if we're reading a value from memory, also generally we're computing its address, so this seems to also be pretty good for the read. So like if we think of MRMoveQ, right, this seems to be what we want to do for the address input. So MRMoveQ, remember, produces the address in the same way. What about our other instructions here and the other inputs? question? Where do the control bits for the mux that's going where?
Into the ALU.
Into the ALU. So you mean here?
Yeah.
Where's the control logic? So like I said last time, I'm generally not drawing control logic, but presumably there'd be some circuit that takes our I code and our I fund value, which I haven't drawn, and uses that to compute what this mux does and also what this input selected which operation does. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Have you already talked about the control bit for the data in, data out?
Have we talked about the control in for the data in, data out? So sure, on this diagram, we have that the write signal is going to be set by a function of the opcode. So you do have that under control based on the opcode, which seems like it should be enough to know whether the instruction writes or not. Other questions before we talk? So who would like some more time? So a little more time to go over things. And this is another case where you might need to know what the pop and call instructions do to answer this question. Okay, so let's start with not. Who thinks we'd have a problem for not? For our remove queue? For am remove queue? Couple people. For pop queue? Few people. For call? Okay, more people, but still no majorities on this. Okay, so let's start with not. So for not, I guess observation we might have is maybe it would be better if we didn't, if we had also like a read control signal, but probably it's okay if we read invalid locations, but maybe that's less okay for memory. So maybe we want something to control that I didn't draw. For our remove queue, for we're reading from RA, and if you look up the instruction, it's RA, D, RB, I believe. So we're reading from RA, check, and we can send RA as the place, as the thing to write. So that looks good. And we can want to add D, which is on this signal from the instruction. We can select that and send that into our ALU as the A input. And we can send a register B's value as the B input. We can select to add them and send that as the address. So this seems fine to me. For mRemove queue, if we remember, this is going to be RB, sorry, this is DRB into RA is how it's written on our instruction encoding, which means that we can use the same thing we did to compute the address for RMFQ for MRMFQ. It does work because the order in the encoding is different than in the assembly. Just to enable this, just so we don't need an extra set of muxes here. So the address is fine. Since we're reading and not writing, the value that's being put in this data in signal won't matter, even though it's going to be wrong. So this, I think, is also okay. for pop. So for pop, you might say, okay, so pop is pop RA, if we look up our encoding. So that seems great. We have RA's value here going to the right place. We want to write it to, pop RA. We want to store it. So we're going to take this value out of here and store it. So we can still do that. But we have maybe a little bit of an issue. So say, okay, so we want to get it from the stack. So where's the location of the stack? Well, we're going to read the stack pointer in source B. And then we're going to figure out where the stack pointer goes. And that seems fine, right? We're sending the location the stack pointer went into the data memory. And this is where we need to be very careful about how push and pop work. So pop, if our stack pointer points somewhere, this is the current top of the stack. And after we do a pop, this is the top after we do a pop. The value we want to get from pop is this is going to be, this is what pop reads from memory. Is the current top of the stack, not the top after we pop. What we're computing with our ALU is the top afterwards. So this is not going to work for pop because we have the wrong version of the stack pointer there. Yes, we want to send the stack pointer to the data memory, and yes, we're sending a stack pointer to the data memory, but it's the new stack pointer, not the old one. And the old one is where pop reads. And this is, I think, one of the biggest points of confusion in sort of implementing our processor. And one thing you might say is, well, shouldn't we therefore read from memory first and then modify the stack pointer? And well, that's not how we're running our instructions. We're doing everything in one cycle. All the modifying is going to happen at the end of that cycle, whether we like it or not. That's the only time we can do it. So we need to figure out how we can get this address that we actually want to read to the data memory. And well, we can do that because the address that we actually want to read, it's right here. We can just send it to the data memory. We can do that. Obviously, we're going to need a box. We're not just going to send two values at once. But we can do that, and that's what we'll do. So here we have the wrong address. So questions on why that's the wrong address being computed, what our fix looks like. Okay, so then we have call. So for call, can someone tell me, what do you think the problem with call is? Someone who said we had a problem with call. Yeah. Has to compute the new location. What's the new location?
Well, this call brings it from, it goes to the location, it's the old location
of the
stack, right?
The old location, which old location? Like an old stack location, an old something else location? So call pushes something on the stack. And you said it's an old location? So let's go through an example of call. So we have like, call foo here, and where do I find the location that this pushes, you said? What's the purpose of this? How does this instruction differ from jump foo? Start with that.
Well, jump foo is
Anyone? How does it differ from junk foo? What's the difference? Yeah.
We push the current instruction, like the current PC.
So we push something, the current PC, you said, on the stack. So if we, we're going to need to be very precise about this, but we want to push something about where our current location in the machine code. And the reason we want to do that is later on, there's going to be a return, and the return better go back somewhere we used to be. Now, if we push the address of the current instruction, it seems like we'd end up going back to that instruction, because return just uses that address, so we actually want to put the address that's right after the call. So do I have the address on my diagram right now? Anyone? Yeah. Valp, it's actually on here. It's Valp, it's something we did at the very beginning. We already have it, we don't even need to compute it. It's already computed, did it in the fetch stage stuff. But the problem is we need to get it into the memory. We need to write it to the memory, and to do that, we're going to need to send it all the way over to the data input. Now, as for where we're writing it, well, we're writing it to the new top of the stack. So we have the current top. We don't want to modify that. We're going to compute the new top of the stack. We're going to write it there. So in fact, our old ALU output was fine for that. But the problem is that it's not a value from a register. It's a location we have to get from elsewhere, and we got it from our next instruction computation. So questions about issue with call. So this is the wrong data. Yeah. So question, what does the data in do when we're reading from the data memory? Nothing, it's ignored. But there's going to be a value there because it's a physical wire, so it has something on it. Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Okay, so our memory stage, we have our read and write enable signals. We have our address to read from or write to, and we mentioned that's mostly the ALU output, but we have exceptions for pop, and it turns out also return for the same reason as pop. Our data is the value to write. Mostly we're writing the first register we read, but we have a special case for call where in fact we want to write, it ends up being LP, the address of the instruction following the call. So that gives a diagram something like this, where I've added a mux. I didn't draw the signal all the way over from valp. I just wrote PC plus 9, which is what valp will be in the case of call. And I also added a mux. Questions? Okay, so finally we have, well, not finally yet, almost finally, we have writeback. So writeback is where we write values to registers. And we have two places to write registers. And you may have noticed they're called DestD and DestM. And the reason our textbook uses these names is DestD is for writing the result from the ALU. DestM is for writing a result from memory. And there's one instruction where we need to write two different registers, and that's pop. And for pop, we have a result from the ALU, which is the new stack pointer, and we have a result from the memory, which is the value we're popping. And sort of that's how they're named. So this is our canonical setup, is that we have the ALU output, something we write to DestD potentially, and the memory output, something we write to DestM. So this is the textbook's convention, and I'm going to follow it in my diagrams, but you don't have to do that. We don't care what you use Destian, NSTEM, and HCLRS for, so if you want to use them differently, that's fine. Just make sure you know what you're doing. You know, make sure you're consistent with yourself. But the textbook follows this convention. And let's talk about here. So here, with which of these instructions do I have a problem? Let's start with not. Who thinks that this is going to work fine for not? If this is not going to work fine for not. What I've got here. Who has no clue? Okay, so let's think about what we've done. So what I did here is I connected destem to RA. Should make this clearer for RA. This is RA and destied RB. And I've also connected the ALU output to the next value for destied. This would be reg input E. And the next value for destem to the data memory output should be reg input M. So my question is, what instructions does this not work correctly for? So thinks we have a problem with not? Thinks we have no problem with not? Works fine for not? Okay, so we have a slight majority for not. So you might say, if we look at the not instruction, there's no RA and RB. So that might be a complaint you have, but that's not the way things really work, because in our machine code, we're gonna have our not, which is encoded as 10, and then we're gonna have the next instruction. And let's say our next instruction is a halt. Well, when we read that instruction, we're gonna have to split up what we read from the instruction memory into components, and when we're doing that, we're not taking into account whether or not there's really an RA and an RB. So we're gonna say that this signal here, these parts of the next instruction are RA and RB. So we're gonna say that RA is 0 and RB is 0 in this case, because that's just the bytes of the halt instruction that we're interpreting as RA and RB. And then we're saying we went to write to register 0. Register 0 is RAX, if we look up on our table. That's probably gonna be not great. The not instruction shouldn't modify RAX. And it's gonna change RAX to whatever the ALU outputs or whatever the data memory outputs. And it should just leave RA the same. There's no guarantee that that's gonna happen whatsoever, pretty much no matter what we do to all this, you know, no matter how we set up the ALU is gonna be computing something that probably is not just the same thing that it got input from here or here, and the data memory is going to be outputting something which probably isn't the same thing that was the old value of RAX. So we would have a problem for not. So how can we fix that? Yeah.
Make it right to register 9.
So we want to have an option here to write to register none. Okay, so we'll add that. We'll add muxes for both destd and destem, so we can choose no register. So that's gonna fix none. So once we fix that, let's go through the remaining instructions with this fix. Now we can write to RA or B or nothing. So where do we still have problems? Give you a minute or two. who'd like some more time still? Okay, so let's start with IRMOQ. Thinks we have some problem with IRMOQ. Bunch of people. Someone tell me what's wrong with IRMOQ? Yeah.
We aren't getting the constant.
Okay, we don't have any way of getting the constant to one of these inputs here. We have a way of writing to the destination register. We can send RB into DestD, but the input for DestD is coming from the ALU, which could have the constant, but we have to add something to it. That's going to be the old value of RB. And that's not really what we want to do. Like, it will only work if RB is 0, it looks like, or something like that. We have a problem with, we need to get the constant somewhere. So the most obvious fix would be that we'd have a way of pulling this constant into here. We'll add a mux to choose between ALU output or that constant. Who thinks we have a problem with MMOQ? Thinks we have no problem with MMOQ. Okay, so it seems like we have a good majority saying no problem with MMOQ, and I concur. No, we can do MMOQ with what we have here. So that is okay. So there we have constant. RMOQ is okay. Who thinks we'd have a problem with RMOQ? Thinks we'd have no problem with RMOQ. Okay, we have a majority saying no problem. I concur, I think should be okay. Thinks we have a problem with AddQ. Thinks we have no problem with AddQ. Okay. Majority saying that. Okay, how about PopQ, or most probably the most complicated instruction on this list? Thinks we'd have a problem with PopQ. Thinks we'd have no problem with PopQ. Okay, so we have a split. Someone want to defend having a problem with PopQ. Yeah?
There needs to be a way to set
the stack pointer. Okay, we need to write to the stack pointer. So, and we have no way of doing that because in DestM here, it can be array, or DestM to RSP, we need to write to the stack pointer. We need to write one of these stack pointers. So either DestM or DestD better be the stack pointer. And it looks like for pop, neither of them can be that. Array is going to be like the register we're popping into. If we look at the encoding of pop, RB is going to be OXF, register none. That's not going to work. As for whether we're going to use DestD or DestM for that, it's going to be more convenient with this setup to use DestD because it's already connected to the ALU output, which is going to be the new RSP value. But again, you don't have to do that if you connect the ALU and memory differently. Okay, so here we have a problem that we need to specify the stack pointer somewhere as the place to write. So that gives me this logic. So I add the ability, I should go through, to implement IRMOVEQ by taking the constant from the instruction. To implement RMOVEQ, which we didn't talk about, but for RMOVEQ, it looks like we want to take the value we just read and write it out and not compute something on it, and also the ALU output. And also, I needed to add my choice to be able to write to the stack pointer or write to known registers. So questions on the design I chose here? Yes?
I know it's really bad for many reasons, but what if these pop RSPs? Like, would that cause an issue because they're both reading?
The question is, what happens if we pop RSP? So our textbook solution to this problem is that the way this register file is going to work is that it's going to carefully choose that when we're writing to both the same register with DestD and DestM, DestM is going to take precedence. And that's how pop RSP is going to be implemented, the way that x86 specifies it should work. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay, so this is, I think, the most straightforward way of doing writeback. This is not what our textbook does. So our textbook says, gosh, this is a complicated mux here. maybe we can make that simpler by just being able to add zero. So our textbook lets you add zero by having just a zero input for ALUB, and then we can implement IRemoveQ by adding the displacement plus zero and storing the result. We can implement RemoveQ by taking the register value plus zero and storing the results. This is what our textbook does. I don't care what you do in the HCL assignments, but I'm telling you what the textbook does, so you, when you read it, you aren't confused. Okay, so finally we have our last stage, which is the PC update. So in the PC update, we choose the value for the PC in the next cycle. This is the input to the PC register, and we have it usually being VLP, that address of the next instruction after the PC increment. We have exceptions for call, conditional jumps, or normal jumps, and return. So for call and conditional jumps, we get the constant from the instructions where we want to go. For return, it's the value from memory, so I have these three possibilities. So mine. Address of the following instruction in the machine code. I have a value all the way from the memory that we read from return, or I have the constant from the instruction. I'll just choose between them. So questions? But. So, now that we know our full circuit, we have a bunch of muxes here. So we have a mux before the PC, we have a mux before destem, for desd, before ALU input A, ALU input B, for the data memory, data in, and the address in. And my first question is, when we're writing the instruction add R8, R9, how are these muxes going to be sent? To look at that. So let's start with the PC. Who can tell me the PC? We have three possibilities. It could be set from the top input, the middle input, or the bottom input. Let's start. Who thinks we should use the top input? So we should use the middle input. Thinks we should use the bottom input. Okay, so we have a majority for the bottom input because for an add, we want to take our instruction length at it and go to the next instruction afterwards. There's no other flow control. Okay, so let's move on. So that's the PC. How about destem? So destem, so if we remember, just clarity, that the input for destem would be, the main input would be RA, for destd it would be RB. So for destem, who thinks we should use our top input? Thinks we should use our bottom input. So we have a majority for the bottom input, but some dispute. So one way of looking at this is we can say, if we're setting this input, what are we writing? And we can look at what we're writing, and well, we better be writing the output of the memory, and well, that's not really useful for this instruction, so probably we're not doing that. So that would be one way of determining that I think the bottom input is right. Another way we can determine it is we could say, the add instruction, if we look at the encoding, well, RA, in this case, is going to be R8, and RB is going to be R9. And we want to write to RB, we don't want to write to RA, so the choice of writing to RA doesn't seem like a good idea. How about desd? Who thinks we're going to take the top input? Okay, so we have pretty good consensus on that. That's because we better write to RB. We don't want to write to nothing or the stack pointer. And we are writing the ALU output, which seems like a good idea. How about ALUA? Who thinks we want, so ALUA, this, the mux, this input to the ALU, the top one. Who thinks we want the top input? The middle input? The bottom input? Okay, middle input. because we want to get the current value of RA's value. And for ALUB, we're going to want the top input because we want RB's value. So that gets us answer like this. And I've also drawn out what signals are where. So RA is 8, RB is 9. So we got the value of register 8 and the value of register 9, what we're adding together. So I guess that's where I'm out of time for today. So next time we might spend a little time reviewing this, maybe. Probably depending how the quiz goes. And otherwise, we'll start talking about making our stages into things that matter a little more.